Welcome to Comics,
episode
255.
This week, we talk about
Midnighter out.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
Well, that's fun. Man, Germany has, like, the easiest, most lax requirements. So, like, I've looked at England, because I love England, and I'd love to live there. And they're like, no, you need to show that you can invest, like, $1 million in property here before you can come over. Germany is like, if you have a master's degree, which I never finished mine, and I don't think I will. But they're like, if you can show you're a qualified professional, and a qualified professional needs to make, I think it's like $70,000 a year.
Okay, not too crazy.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, I can wait a couple years, and that will be fine.
Yeah.
So it's like, they just want you to be able to work and feed yourself and not be homeless. And I'm like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I was reading an article, I don't remember what it was, might have been Time or something like that, I don't know. One of those faux newspaper magazines, and they were claiming that Germany is the new America, because America is super fucking hard to get into. Even just for tourism, depending on what country you're from, it's real fucking hard to get into America at all. Meanwhile, Germany is like, yeah, come, it's cool, come visit, come stay, you know? Refugees? Yeah, bring them on. Whatever. Come on, everybody. Come to Germany. It's wonderful. Like, they've taken on that mantle when we've, like gotten more draconic and tried to just huddle in and become isolationist again. But Germany's completely trying to throw open their borders. And there's backlash there, of course. Not everybody's happy about it, you know. But in terms of policy, they're shockingly easy to get into. And they're doing fine. They're like the big economic powerhouse in the EU.
Yeah, I mean, it works really well.
Yeah.
There's no denying it.
Immigrants work hard, and they want to make a living, and they're excited to be in the country they've immigrated to, and, like, there's no reason not to have immigrants. There's really, really not. Every single economic study you look at says immigrants are awesome.
Yep.
And you know what? When they come and they take your jobs, you go do something else.
Yeah, it's not like...
Most of the time you just end up doing something else. It's not, yeah.
It's not like they have a super high unemployment rate. In fact, I think they have the lowest unemployment rate in the world.
Yeah.
I read that somewhere, and it's like, yeah, there's jobs.
And like, those immigrant, and especially, like, the refugee communities, make their own work, right? Like when they had a huge influx of Turkish population, like, you get these Turkish communities, right? Which are kind of, you know, they're a little bit ghettoized, but you know what happens? People from Turkey miss Turkish food, so then they open a Turkish restaurant, and they hire Turkish people, and all of those Turks pay taxes to Germany. Right?
Yep.
And, like, that's a new job, like, that's a new business with new employees in a new part of town. So you need construction for the new people, which is, like, it's just, there's nothing bad there. There's just not. But we need to build a wall between us and Canada.
Yep.
Yeah.
You gotta get those goddamn, like, hockey-watching poutine eaters out of the damn country.
Oh, but poutine is so good.
I know.
And they really like hockey, and they're all really nice.
Yeah, I like Canada. But, you know, we got to build that wall. Damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Isolation. I'm, like, really happy Ted Cruz dropped out of the race, because I really don't want him. But I feel like someone needed to fight Trump on something.
If in the worst-case scenario, Trump gets elected... you're going to get the same gridlock, right? Because What always happens is when you get a gridlock Congress like this, people get pissed off and they vote the other way. So even if by some deal with the devil, Trump gets into office, the House and the Senate are both going to end up being Democratic, and fucking nothing's going to get done anyway. So at the very least, he'll be a lame duck president.
So here's this. I know he says, like, oh, build the wall, and he has all his insane bullshit. I think a lot of that is for show. I don't think that he's going to even try to. I don't think any constituents, like, even fucking know what he's going to do. Because yeah. I think he does actually have, like, a fairly liberal political past. Like, he's been shown to have fairly, like, liberal beliefs. So
he was a huge contributor to Hillary's last campaign push.
Yeah. And I mean, so I don't think anything he says now can be trusted. But at the same time, I don't really think that, obviously, someone like him should be, like, the lead representative of our country.
Yeah, that's more the problem, is what this looks like to the rest of the world, right?
Yeah.
And
I was gonna, like, you know, I almost feel like it's just as likely that he will put into practice all the stuff Bernie's been going for as likely as he is to build a wall. Yeah. I don't know his actual stances, but it's gonna look bad, and he's not a diplomat. He's a person who, you know, is used to being on a stage, but being center stage.
Yeah, and I like, it's the old, you know, say whatever you can to get voted into office. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that Obama wanted to do in his first campaign push.
Mm-hmm.
There's like three big things he wanted to do to change our country, and all three, I don't remember what they all were, but they were all three things that people were rallying behind and really wanted. And the only one he managed to get through was affordable health care. Universal health care.
And like, not quite what he promised there.
And so. it took a second term.
Yeah.
Right. So like, you know, as crazy as Trump is, and people say he's fucking insane, and nothing he's proposing is things that can actually happen. I mean, by the flip side, kind of Bernie too. You know, like,
yeah,
Bernie, I love you, buddy, and I really do want you to get rid of all of my student loan debt from me and my wife. That'd be fantastic, but that ain't gonna happen, bro. I'm sorry, because that collapses an entire industry, and there's a million and one reasons. And I know you can fix it all with taxes, but you're gonna have to tax people first and then do it. And with the speed our system moves, you're going to tax everyone, and then you're not going to be in office anymore. And the government's going to be super rich off of your tax policy, but none of the other things you wanted to do with that money are then going to get implemented.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm super socialist. I'm down for giving the country a shitload more money, because, you know, there's potholes in the road, and we don't have enough police officers, and teachers don't get paid enough, so I'm all down for paying more taxes. That's not a thing I have a problem with. I just, you know, if you pay more taxes, you should be more invested in where things are being allocated. But that's not, again, that's not our country. People will pay taxes, get pissed on how it's getting spent, and then do absolutely fuck all nothing about it.
Well, people have all this, like, good old-fashioned libertarian rage, and I understand that, because I think that you've basically been drafted into a social contract that you did not volunteer for. You pay taxes into a community, but you never chose your citizenship, and most people can't choose their citizenship. But with that being the case, look, if you want roads, if you want police, fire departments, public education, pay the goddamn taxes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, unless you live in your libertarian dream state, which is perhaps a viable method. I can't say that I'd necessarily disagree with doing that. It's not the reality. So
yeah,
you gotta live with what you got.
And the idea the other way is, you know, you lower taxes so that people are more free to spend, and by more spending, they generate more income from the even though taxes are lower, they're spending more and generating more income for the government that way. Or they have more money to pay for private services instead of government-operated services, so the government can close down services that are being provided more efficiently by the public sector. Except that's or by the private sector. So that's not how it fucking works. Like, Medicare is way more efficient because guess what? They don't have to pay for fucking advertising. Like, Kaiser is, I like having Kaiser, but I don't want to know how much, like, what percentage of my payments to them go to advertising and not to my care. Like, I would rather have 100% going to my care.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Medicare does. That system's way more efficient. And beyond that, every study in, like, the last 30 years shows that when you lower taxes and give people more money, they don't spend it. They hoard it. They save it.
Yeah. Which,
like, because we've been pounding into people's heads, you need to save money, save money, save money, save for retirement. Don't go too much in debt. Save money, save money. That's what we've been teaching everyone fiscally. So then when we do something to give them more money, they save it. Like, what was the thing that Obama did to try to get us out of the Great Recession, the stimulus package?
Mm-hmm.
And it failed because everybody just took it and put it in their savings account. And it's like, yeah, bro, that's the smart thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, the vast majority aren't going to take money and just pour it back into a dying economy when they are not financially secure, or when they're not feeling financially secure, whether or not they are.
Let's move.
Merca.
I really want to move. So you want to talk about this week's comic?
Yeah, let's do this.
This week's comic.
This week we read Midnighter Out by Steve Orlando, collecting the first 7 issues of Midnighter. This kicks off our best of 2015 series, even though we're in the middle of fucking May. Because, you know, we had a couple months of guest hosts lined up because I was going to be out on paternity, and so I didn't want to bump any of those to be like, oh, you know, Alex, I really am excited to talk about, you know, One Punch Man and Kill la Kill with you, but let's move that 3 months from now. So instead we put off the best of 2015 stuff, and we're starting off with Best of DC, and we're starting off with Midnighter Out. And this was on a lot of best of lists, best of DC lists and best of trade paperbacks lists. There's a couple sites that have lists of like just best of everything, and I'll admit this wasn't on those, but this was on enough lists that I felt like it should be included. And after having read it, I don't know. Okay, Jen, I have a theory. Tell me if I'm crazy. By the way, listeners, we totally, like, last week had 4 hosts, and now we're going to have 2, because David's kids are being crazy. So it's just me and Jen. So, Jen, tell me if I'm crazy. Is it possible that this is on best of lists just because the main, just because the protagonist is an out gay male?
I am so relieved you said that, because I spent the entire week since I read it saying, is it, Will I gain ire from anyone if I say that this is popular because the guy's gay? Because, okay.
I don't even know if it's popular.
I don't know, but like, okay. So, 2 thoughts on this. One is that the art is amazing.
Yes. Especially the fight scenes.
Yes, and any scene where he's like using his computer brain to calculate things.
Oh my God.
I understand that's a really good reason to put this on a best of list. I also know that 2015 was a big year of social justice and awareness, and that's really cool. But I also think that you're right. This very well may have influenced why this is on a best of list, because frankly, the plot was really not great.
Yeah.
It was certainly not best of. Either that or, I mean, okay, I actually did not read too much DC in 2015. I think I focused more on, like, the indie publishers and Marvel.
And they're crushing it.
Yeah, maybe DC's having a dry spell, but Jesus Christ, the big reveal at the end? That was so fucking dumb.
Do you have any previous knowledge of who Prometheus was?
No.
This is your first time saying? Okay.
Yep.
Because I was actually kind of excited to see Prometheus, because Prometheus is a character that you see every once in a while square off with the entire Justice League and routinely win. Because he has a computer in his brain that is better than Midnighter's, right? He has the ability to fight someone and immediately know everything about their fight style. So he'll fight Batman and win because he knows he has learned and memorized and has immediate access to all of the fight techniques that Batman does. So, I mean, Midnighter sees all of the potential outcomes of a fight, but Prometheus does as well and knows how to counter him in the best possible way. Because he knows every piece of that martial art. Right? And not just martial art, but even like fight tendencies and that kind of thing. He knows everything about the way somebody fights. So I was psyched for the reveal and then super pissed when it seemed like Midnighter won because he punched harder and had protagonist power.
Yeah. So.
Right? Like, I was reading that issue and I was like, why is he winning? This makes no sense. And not only is he winning, he's whooping Prometheus's ass for like no reason.
So I totally thought that Matt was going to be the boyfriend in the refrigerator. And, you know, I think depending on how the next trade goes, maybe he is.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to be killed by a villain to get in the refrigerator. You can die of superhero causes. And, I had not known about Prometheus, but okay. If this guy can beat up Batman, what is he doing getting the crap beaten out of him in all of 2 pages?
Right? By somebody from the fucking Vertigo universe. Somebody who's a member of Wildstorm.
Yeah. So, that's a disappointment. But, you know, more than that, I just felt like it was a clunky reveal. Because I think it's really good when you have a character who has that superhero side and then like the domestic side. Like, I don't know, Peter Parker is one of the best examples of this, yeah. Right? Like he has to balance that life. And that would have been super interesting with Midnighter, who is so obsessed with fighting and punching and figuring out who he is between being like this fighting machine in a literal sense and being a person with relationships. And instead it was like, okay, they kind of show them getting close, and it seems like Matt's kind of nice, and then suddenly, no, he's a villain. Whoops. I don't know.
Even the, I don't know. I mean, the reveal is a little bit clunky, but I like that Matt's been around for a couple issues by then, right? It's not like Matt showed up, and then the next issue revealed that he's a supervillain. Like,
yeah.
Steve Orlando took time to establish Matt as a character in this comic before revealing that Matt is Prometheus. And I appreciate the investment that happened there, and I appreciate all of it, but to have the fight be so short and so one-sided takes all of the gravitas out of that reveal, right? Like, you get, like, I think it's a full page with Prometheus going, like, yes, I have fooled you! Fuck you and your computer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except then he gets his ass whooped anyway, and it's like, you've done, like, I can see you've done all this work, and in the end, it has amounted to nothing. Like, you haven't done anything useful with it. Like, there's a million and one ways you could have dispatched Midnighter if you're in a situation where he cannot see any variables, where his computer is not working. Like, literally, it's just a dude who's punching hard.
So, I think,
you can't beat him there. You can't beat him there. You can't think of some or even some other situation other than punching him and punching each other. Like, there's so many ways you could have done this better, Prometheus, and I expected more out of a character like that.
Oh man, you know what made the transition really goofy? So Matt stabs him in the kitchen and then walks away for one frame, and in the next frame, in the middle of their conversation, he comes back in full villain outfit.
Yes.
And it's like, that was a fast change.
That's true.
And like, you kind of get like this impression that he's just in the next room, like stripping down and then putting on spandex. And it's like, what is happening? So I think the pacing there, like that whole scene was condensed. But I also think that overall pacing that relationship was an issue. Because first we start out, like the comic opens with Midnighter on a date with a guy he ends up being friends with later.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they
comes
devote
on way too strong.
Yeah, and he did. That was super creepy.
Super creepy.
But then he focuses a lot of time, especially every first date. He's like, "And I have like trauma with my ex," which is also creepy. But he spends a lot of time focusing on his past with Apollo, and then we're kind
of which I'm sorry to interrupt you, but his past with Apollo does a really good job of humanizing him.
Yeah.
I think that was a highlight of this character and in this comic, even though it's only put in there sparingly, but it's a window into his personal life when he's happy. It informs his character today. Like that was, I think, one of the good things of this comic. And dwelling on it like that is something people do, you know, whether you're a superhero or not. Like I feel like that was done really well.
Yes, really, I agree. And you know, that was kind of the thing about Matt. I spent the whole time thinking, wait, Midnighter and Apollo are like the couple in this run, in this series, and whatever. You know, who the fuck is this Matt dude? So I think what would have worked better is if they had actually held out that relationship longer, extended it a couple trades, so you think it's real, and then you think, oh, maybe, you know, the breakup's real, maybe they're moving on with the character. It would give more reason for Midnighter to trust Matt to the point where he wouldn't figure out that he was being betrayed. Mm. It would, I don't know, like, it would build a more interesting characterization, I think. But I feel like cramming in three relationships, past and present, into one trade just made it seem like he wasn't forming these connections. And I think that's an important part of his character, because he's like struggling with the fact that he was built to be a certain way and wants to kind of humanize himself.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, hinging a drama on that is too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think okay. So you say hinging a drama on that. And this is what gets me about this comic. I get the feeling, and we briefly glossed over this, but this was included on a lot of lists because the protagonist is openly gay, right? And that's supposed to capital M matter, you know? The way that, you know, Ms. Marvel being Middle Eastern and Muslim family matters, capital M matters. And like, Captain Marvel's costume revamp, capital M matters. Like, Midnighter is supposed to matter that way. But he doesn't, because he's not as important of a character, which is funny to say, because Kamala Khan is out of nowhere. Midnighter's an established character from before Kamala Khan's existence.
Mm-hmm.
But not only does he not seem to matter as much as a character, I feel like the portrayal of him as a gay man feels cliched constantly. And the fact that he is gay informs too much of the plot and not enough of his character. So the main turn of events in this comic hinges on the fact that he's a gay man in a troubled relationship. Matt might end up being, Prometheus might just end up being a woman, might just end up being the character in the refrigerator for Midnighter. But I feel like so much of this comic is driven by the fact that Midnighter is gay, and not in a way that capital M matters, in a way that, like, I don't know.
No, I know what you mean.
Feels stereotyped.
Yeah.
It feels too stereotypical.
Well, I don't even know if it's stereotypical because, you know, I think his relationships are not that abnormal. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's dating a few people. He has an ex he's getting over. He, you know, it doesn't work out with one guy, but they become friends, and then the next guy seems like it will. And I think that's a very universal set of experiences. But mm-hmm. I think it's that it almost feels like there's these, like, just fingers right off the panel being like, hey guys, this guy is gay. Did you notice he's gay? In case you missed it, he's gay. Hey, yeah.
Yes. That's a great way to put it, Jen.
there's like, it's, okay, first off, I want to say that I actually think that it's really good that DC is featuring a gay character, because I think that it's important for people to feel represented, you know, in the stuff that they read. Like, that's great. Yeah. And
There should be more openly gay, lesbian, transgender, whatever. There should be as much representation as you can fit into a fictional universe. And because it's a fictional universe, you ostensibly should be able to fit as much of it as you fucking want. Yeah, there's no problem with Midnighter being gay and being a protagonist of his own comic.
Yeah, and it's like, it's that he is a shallow character, and I know you can only do so much character development in one trade, but I think when a trade stands out for a best of, you can put a lot in there. For instance, I always go back to Kraven's Last Hunt.
Oh my god,
yes. You know, like, Kraven is stupid and goofy all the time, and then it's just like this beautiful, mournful piece of art that we get in that one trade.
And that trade even internally explains why Kraven has been a joke. Like, Kraven has a scene where he's like, you know I'm a joke, and I just want everybody to take me fucking seriously for once.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna really do this. I'm gonna actually try to plan out how to get Spider-Man. Like, and to go to that level and be like, take a character that everybody knows is a joke, thinks is a joke, and give him a rationale, give him the wherewithal to know he's a joke and know why he wants to not be a joke for once. That, like, oh, Dematteis has such tight writing in that trade.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it's
every
just
time I think about it, I drool.
It's proof that it can be done. It's proof that it's there, man. You know, there are ways to build up a character really well. And I think that we don't get much of Midnighter. I think arguably, you know, just to play devil's advocate on myself, like, that is kind of a character flaw of his, that he is, like, punching gay man, and that is it. And he wants to be more, right? But at the same time, he still is a person, and people have more traits to them than that. And it's just, I guess he's not interesting. He's very one-dimensional because he's punching gay man, and I don't see much else to him.
Well, and I think, okay, so the comic, how do I want to put this? So it opens, this comic opens with a scene of him having sex with another man, which isn't something I'm against seeing on the page. I'm a straight male. I have a wife. I love her. I love straight males, straight white man sex. but like, you know, if it informs the character and drives the comic, fine. Show me two men fucking. That's part of the story. And I am comfortable enough that I can see that on a page and appreciate two people loving each other. But it doesn't feel like that. It feels like the tropey over-sexualization of the male character, or the gay man.
Well, you know what it is? Sorry, go on.
And because this comic uses a whole page for that, that's a whole page you can't use for storytelling. Like, and that is the one of the first impressions that this comic chooses to give you of this character, is what feels like a trope to me. And it's just, it's not, you know, you bring up Kraven's Last Hunt, and it's such an efficient comic, and I think about that page, and I think how that's so not efficient. You know, especially because the art is so good here. You could just have, like, those little tiny pop-up panels of him fucking the other dude, you know? And you could get the same idea across and be way more efficient. Like, the art in here is so good. You can do that, but it doesn't. That first impression of Midnighter, I think, is what threw me off for the rest of this comic. And maybe I just need to get over that and read this again. But that threw me off so hard. That whole page of fucking.
You know what I think it is, though? I think that it's important to normalize sex and sexuality. Like, so I think that showing that as you know, just, it's a thing people do every day. Like, any kind of sex, that's good.
Yeah.
But, it's weird because Marvel doesn't show sex scenes. When was the last time you opened up Spider-Man and you saw, like, Peter Parker's butt while he's banging a naked Mary Jane? It just doesn't happen.
Well, that's because they Disney.
Yeah, right? They do. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Now, I actually have no problem having a comic where you open it up and have Peter Parker and Mary Jane going at it because they're a couple and that's normal.
Yeah, and they're married and that's a healthy part of their relationship.
But you know what? Like, I understand Marvel doesn't do that because a Spider-Man is big with kids and you don't really want your 6-year-old seeing that and all. You know, like, there's limits, but Oh, I said Marvel. I keep, like, putting Best of DC in Marvel. I think I just got Marvel brain. But, you know, DC doesn't do this either. You don't open it up and see Batman banging Catwoman or
you did.
Robin, for that matter.
No, there was...
Really?
Right after New 52 came out, I don't remember if it was Catwoman or Batman, but the ending of the first comic...
Yeah, but it wasn't
pretty,
so...
I mean, they weren't naked, but you knew what they were doing. Like,
I read like, that one.
Batman folded the codpiece away, and she unzipped. And, like, I mean, it was... They were in costume, but it was a lot more explicit than I think I would argue
that it wasn't as graphic as this, though.
No, not. Yeah. It was nowhere near this level, but it was far above what Marvel does.
Yeah, and as I just said, I think Marvel tries to be more friendly to a wider audience than DC, because DC is, like, grittier in a lot of ways. But, like, oh, you'd never see Superman banging Lois. Or Lois banging Superman, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, however they do their relationship.
Yeah.
Maybe she's the Dom.
She probably is. that's why they don't show us. It's a secret. But, yeah, it's like sex is not normalized in comics.
Yeah.
Comics do not show us butts unless it's like Deadpool. And he doesn't have a pretty butt, so
Or something you go and find in that section around the corner at the comic book store. You know, the one that's through the curtain?
Yeah.
Which is a bunch of stuff you really don't want. Maybe one or two things you do. I think the pro is back there. You know, there's one or two things back there that are worth reading, but for the most part, it's Western hentai. And have fun, you know, if that's your thing. Go ahead, buy a couple. But that's not the kind of thing we're going to read for this show, so. Oh, I say that, but we did read Tarot, didn't we?
We did.
Tarot
we
is
certainly
back there.
Did. Oh, man. But, yeah, it's like, so on the one hand, I'm like, good, they're showing sex as, like, a thing people do. On the other hand, I'm like, but sex is actually not shown that often in comics, so why do it here? Are you... And I don't know what the authors are thinking or wanting. You know, maybe they're just like, look at these dudes, they have a relationship. But is it to be like, hey, they're gay? Like, because that's what it feels like.
That is what it feels like.
Is it just to be like, hey, this is a guy doing his thing? And as an audience, I couldn't know. There's no way I could know. But it's so strange and out of place for DC that it comes off as like, it's not shocking by any means, but it's more like, it stands out.
Yeah. And I mean, okay. So we can get into the discussion about whether or not the title of a story matters. But I'm in the camp that the title of the story, the title of the trade, the title of any story doesn't per se matter in and of itself. It could be whatever it wants, so long as it effectively sets the tone for the story you're trying to tell, right? Like The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Okay, it has ring in it twice. It's not a really well-constructed title. You know, there's a bunch of things wrong in there. But you get the feel for what's going on. It sounds, you know, The Lord of the Rings. It sounds, fantasy-ish. It kind of, at the very least, it primes you for what you're going to read a little bit. And this comic is called Midnighter. All right, sounds like a superhero. I'm going for a superhero comic. Out. And if you have any sense of the context of this comic, then you know from before you even open the trade that the pump, if you'll, the pump that they're priming here is the fact that Midnighter is gay. That's the title of this comic, is that he's gay. Is, hey, Midnighter is gay. That's basically the title of this comic. And then you open the page and it's, oh, by the way, if you didn't catch the title of this trade, here's two men fucking. And it's, again, it's not the fucking that I have a problem with. I think what you said was right. I think it's just they want to, I don't know, continually remind you in the harshest way. Like, I want to give Steve Orlando the benefit of the doubt and say maybe what he's doing is trying to hit you in the face with the fact that this character is gay. Openly gay and maybe not violently gay, but he's a violent character, and this comic is going to be graphic, right? And it's trying to merge those two tones. This comic is graphic. and the way it displays violence and tone for a lot of things. And Midnighter is gay. And maybe that's what he's trying to do. Maybe that's the vibe you're going for. But because the graphicness of the character and the violence isn't established before that scene, at least not in the same way, all I get is, like, the tropey over-sexualization of the gay character and just the too strong, like, message that this character's gay. You know?
Yeah. And
for me, it's like, if you're the kind of person who needs, like, the shocking wake-up call to the gay protagonist, you probably didn't pick this up. Right? Like, I picked this up hoping to... I genuinely was hoping to get a really good comic with a strong gay protagonist, like, Young Avengers, was it? Wiccan and
it's not...
Hulkling? No.
Yes, Hulkling.
Is it really?
Isn't it?
I think it is. I don't know. I'll just type in gay, Wiccan, and... Hulkling, yeah. Wiccan and Hulkling. Nice. Nice pull. Like, they are a great portrayal of gay characters in comics because they don't fall back on any gay tropes. They're just two people who love each other. And I think, okay, this will be the way I choose to articulate this. Wiccan and Hulkling are people who are gay. And Midnighter is a gay person. And the gayness for Midnighter is the emphasis, and the person is secondary. Like, his character is not fleshed out, but the fact that he's gay is.
Yeah. And I want to point out, too, like, I almost feel like someone listening at this point might be like, wow, they are just, like, latched onto the gay thing.
Because it feels like that's the whole point of the comic.
Yes. And I honestly think, first off, we've also done this when we've read comics that are clearly meant to be like, look how empowered this woman is, but she has, like, literally no personality or anything. It's just like, look at strong woman, but you're like saying it's a strong woman, but you don't show me how or why. That's what I feel here. Like, you know, look at interesting, nuanced character. Well, you've told me that, but this is a frustrating comic. I think first off, because it was on best of list. So when I hear that, I have different expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of best of lists feature very nuanced and deep characterizations. And I don't think Midnighter was an interesting character here. I think he's just, like, this violent guy who had a boyfriend, and then boyfriend turned out to be an evil dude, and he punched him once, and that was it. Like, I think that they could have done so much more, and they just didn't.
Yeah. The disappointing thing for me, anyways, every time we get those flashbacks of him and Apollo... Right, like, that is the most humanizing, the best character work that's happening, and there's not enough of it. And it's disappointing because I get a sense that Steve Orlando has a bigger idea of this character and a bigger idea of who he is as a person, but I'm not seeing enough of it to appreciate it fully. Like, I want to see Steve Orlando's idea of this character, Midnighter, but I'm not getting it. 'Cause in those scenes, like, we see him happy, and we see him, you know, I know there's some word for it, some other language, like, he's happy, but he also knows the outcome of this relationship because of his goddamn computer, and he hates it, but it's part of who he is, and he's trying to balance the identity of that with his happiness. Like, he wants to be happy, but the way he wants to be happy will not conform to the person that he is, and he can't make those two work as much as he fucking tries, and that is really awesome writing.
Yeah.
And I want that so much. I want to see that character. I don't want to see Matt turn into Prometheus. You know? And part of the reason it feels well done is because it's in flashbacks and because it comes up at just the right time in the comic to have impact. And I understand all those narrative things that's happening here, but it feels like those are awesome pieces of storytelling, and I know Steve Orlando has that better character in his head, and I'm disappointed I didn't get to see it. I'm disappointed I see Prometheus get beat in a page and a half. Like, even if that's the one you want to do, like, just make it an interesting fight. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Prometheus builds this elaborate plan, this elaborate setup to basically make Midnighter like any other guy. Right? Like, his computer doesn't work, his door is shut down, Midnighter's just a guy. How come he beats Prometheus? Who's supposed to be like a fucking ninja?
Because he's the protagonist.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Well, I think part of the frustration too is you almost get the sense that a lot of his issues are that he feels like he's not, like, I don't know, a deep enough person. Like, he's just this machine that was meant to kill people and do what the... What was it? The lady in the garden? Was
she the gardener.
The gardener. Oh, what a creative name. Like, just do what the gardener tells him, and he's looking for a way to make himself into a deeper person. But at the same time, it doesn't come across with that level of, like, nuance, I think, where he's struggling with it. It just seems like, oh, this character wasn't examined fully by the narrative.
Well, and that's something I love about this character, actually, is that he is running around trying so hard to get a sense of who he is and know who he is outside of the gardener and outside of Midnighter and who he is as a person. And he's trying so hard to do that, he can't see that he already has. He's already a person with friends and a life. And yeah, his boyfriend, turned out to be a supervillain, and that sucks. But like, even after that, he has friends who want to support him. And he goes out and he does things for himself. Like, he is already becoming a person independent of the gardener. But he's working so hard to do that, he can't see that he's done it. I like that. I like that depth of character that Steve Orlando's doing there. I really, really do. It just, I don't, this, there's so many things that there are to like in here that I feel like it's sad because the complete package of this comic doesn't feel like it hits the mark.
Yeah, it feels like the sum is less than the parts.
Which sucks.
On this one. Yeah. Do we want to talk about the art?
Yeah, I was actually just going to bring this up. We talked about the gardener and the god garden, and the scene where she gets murdered and thrown out the door, and it's just her coming out of the door and the earth, like, looming over her. Oh my god. That's such a good page.
It was.
That's such a good page. Like, that's in the first, like, couple pages, and I was like, I got to that page, I was like, I'm going to fucking love this comic. Like, I'm going to fucking love it. This art's great. And then it went downhill from there. But that page, like, that was like the peak for me. That, and I mean, there's so many good things that happen in this art, but that page was just, it's not what made the art in this comic great, but that page in itself was beautiful and I loved it.
I agree. It was actually my favorite as well. It was just really well done. Like, the scale, the coloring, I figured you'd like this comic, Andy, because the art really reminds me of J.H. Williams III.
Yes, who I love to death.
Yeah, and God, the little tiny frames are so brilliant. Like, yeah. I think we often see, you know, heroes where it's like, oh, they're supposed to be super smart and predict shit, but you never get to see it, and here it's done so well.
Yep.
Where, And the fact, too, that it's, like, colored differently, so you know that it's not happening real-time. It's, like, the calculation of what's about to happen.
Yep. It's like when you do a flashback and everything gets sepia-toned.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this art was one of the great redeeming things of this comic. It just, it couldn't quite carry the day. But, man, it was good. Oh, and I'm kicking myself. I didn't look this up. Hold on. I'm gonna look up and see who this artist is. Oh, God damn you. Oh, ACO. I don't know who ACO is. An acclaimed artist, Akko, Stephen Mooney, and Alec Morgan.
Ah.
I don't know. Never heard ACO or Akko, but it's good. Good job.
Yeah, I mean, this was damn impressive.
Yeah. I'd like to find more. Apparently, most of the work I'm looking on Amazon. Constantine, Dreader 2 of Constantine.
Ooh.
From the New 52, but mostly Midnighter. Huh. Anyway, yeah. Oh, and Grayson. Oh, yeah!
Dick Grayson was in this. I totally forgot about that. He, kidnaps him and takes him to, was it Russia?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was fun. And I like Dick Grayson's like, I really don't want to be here, but I can't think of a good reason to leave.
Well, he has fun.
Yeah.
He gets to go and party with his bro.
And Grayson genuinely believes that if he's not there, Midnighter will kill people.
Yeah.
And Grayson believes he's there to stop Midnighter from killing people, but Midnighter knows better. He's like, I'm just bringing you along because it's fun.
Midnighter's
like,
God.
I kill people or not kill people and whatevs.
Oh, that scene where they're at the very end where they're drinking in the hotel room was actually one of the better scenes of Midnighter's characterization because he's like, you know, I know you think I'm going to murder all these dudes, but I know that you wouldn't like that, so I promise I won't. And he means it.
Yep.
I really like that. Also, the fact that they just, pass out drunk in a random hotel room in Russia, because what you gonna do?
And you know, okay. I hesitate to do this. I'm about to make it about the gayness again.
No!
That's great, because Dick... Because Dick knows and is perfectly fine with it and is playful and fun and palsy and has no reservations treating Midnighter like he would anybody else. And everybody knows Grayson's straight as an arrow. Grayson's the male gigolo of the DC universe, of the Bat family. But he has no problem hanging out with Midnighter all the time and passing out in a fucking hotel room with him. That's great for the portrayal of the character.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. That's great for the portrayal of Midnighter too. And Midnighter likewise, in that sense, there's no tropey. There's a quasi flirty comment every once in a while, but there's no tropey overture or whatever else. Related, coming from Midnighter. Midnighter completely respects Grayson's boundaries in that way.
Yeah, he just teases him. He's like...
Yeah.
He says one or two very subtle lines at him that are clearly meant as teasing.
Yeah. And that's fine. That's what two dudes do when they're dicking around with each other. You know? And so it makes perfect sense that would happen. It just... When the friendship between a gay man and a straight man is a better representation of the gay character than the gay character with another gay, that shouldn't be the highlight of his gay emphasis of the character. I'm talking in social justice circles now.
You know what it is that so many of the relationships, just interpersonal relationships here, focus on his issues in romantic relationships. And we see three major non-romantic people that he deals with. One is the gardener, which aka mommy issues. So that's already all fucked up. And he doesn't talk to her except for two lines, so we don't actually get to see very much of that dynamic. We just know he's salty about it.
Yeah.
The other is his bartender friend.
Yeah.
Who is
awesome.
He's cool, but he's just Midnighter's roadie, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
So,
that's right.
I mean, he's there as requisite bartender moral support, but they have a friendship, but it's not it's not more than something that allows Midnighter to go, like, boo-hoo, I am made for punching.
Made for punching.
Yes. And then there's Dick Grayson, and I think that they actually, there's two issues devoted to that, and they have a good rapport. And I think that's how it becomes kind of the one defining friendship that he has. So part of this is that we get, like, three characters that he's not in a relationship with, and three characters that he is, and that seems like a lot of relationship for one trade, for, like, anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, like, that's why I keep saying it feels super, like, super gay character tropey, like, it doesn't gotta be about his relationships. Like, the fact that he, like, he is a character outside of his gay relationships, and I want to see that character more than I want to see that. Yeah. Anyway, we talked about it enough.
Yeah, you know what it is too. Like, if we saw a female, there is like a weird reader double standard here. I gotta say, if we saw a female character with that many relationships and that few friendships in a comic, we'd be like, "No, she is a strong and independent woman," right? We'd be like, "No way, this is crazy." But then a straight guy, you know, the only person in comics, I think, who could really pull this off is Guy Gardner.
Yeah, Guy Gardner, She-Hulk, Hercules. Dick Grayson.
Okay,
on the flip side.
But keep in mind, too, it's not flings either, so I think that might rule out She-Hulk and Hercules. These are,
I think you're right.
Romance.
Yeah.
With the candles and the dinners, you know? So,
because as much as Dick Grayson is considered one of the man whores of the DC universe, he's genuinely invested in all of those relationships. He just happens to have a lot of them.
Yeah, but it's like Midnighter has, like, you know, he spends a lot of time on OKCupid.
Oh, another bad example would be Oliver Queen. No, that's a terrible example.
Yeah,
Guy Gardner would be the best. But no, even Guy Gardner has a sweet and awesome relationship with Ice.
Yeah, that's true.
Which we haven't read a lot of for this show, and that's one of the things I really want to do. Because their relationship is unique and awesome. Because he is a total dickbag. And she is a shy, sweet, nice girl. And it's one of those things where, like, you see people in the real world that are like this. Like, a guy, the guy who is at the bar, puffing his chest out, being all, like, bravado machismo, and then goes home, and his sweet, quiet wife wears the pants.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that is Guy Gardner. He walks around with the swagger, but in reality, he is completely wrapped around Ice's finger, and it's an adorable relationship that I love, and that's not shown in fiction very much. Even then, maybe not Guy Gardner. Anyway,
yeah.
It's getting late. Let's late this. God. Yeah, that's exactly it. Let's rate this.
Yep. Okay.
I'll go first, because I never go first, and there's only two of us.
Go for it.
I'll see if I can get David to send in a rating too, like he did last time. Anyway, I'm gonna give this I volunteered, now I don't know. I mean, okay, 2.5 is average, right? Mm-hmm. But this art was real good, so I'm gonna put a whole point, bring it to 3.5. But character wasn't so hot, so maybe back down to a 3. And the plot with Prometheus wasn't super enthralling, so maybe like a 2. But then there were glimpses of genius in the character, and I could see what Steve Orlando wanted to do, and maybe I just need to read more. So I'm going to bump it back up. I'm just going to leave it sitting at a plain 2.5, because I see potential here. I see what Midnighter wants to be and can be, and I want to read those things. But those things are not this. And this art is fantastic. I'm not saying I wasted my time reading this, but I wouldn't have elected to have read this if I'd have known I'd be this disappointed after finishing it. I don't know. 2.5. Just straight, normal comic. The art's fantastic. 2.5.
All right. So, yeah, I kind of knew I was going to give it a 2.5 since I, like, finished the last page. And it's not bad, but the way I'm judging this is I know 6 months from now, when someone says, remember the time we read Midnighter? I'm going to say, who the fuck is Midnighter? Okay, so I'm terrible. I like even the really good stuff. My memory of it is incredibly fuzzy, right? So like, there's some stuff that sticks, and I'm sure listeners have heard me refer to like a set of 5 comics over and over. It's because those are the only ones I remember.
Like Kraven's Last Hunt.
Yeah, Kraven's Last Hunt. Boxers and Saints.
Fuck
yeah. Underwater Welder.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and there's a few more, but I guarantee you, I will not remember this, because when I try to think of, like, that one comic with all the little boxes in the art, I'm going to be like, oh, it was We Three. So, you know. And, like, Midnighter, he's a cool character. If I had, like, a lot of time and money, I'd buy the next trade and see what's going on there to see if it develops some more, if he gets, like, more characterization or if he stays the same. You know, how he gets over punching out Prometheus, that kind of stuff. But it's not going to be memorable. The art was superb. The writing felt like not enough. I'm so sorry. Like, I hate saying that.
Yeah, it sucks. I hate critics. And I hate that. I hate when I feel like one when I give a review at the end.
It's the worst to not just be like, it's 5, it's excellent, right? But
yeah.
But I can't, someone else might love this. And if they do, they should. I couldn't. But you know, it just wasn't for me. So 2.5.
All right. We were going to do Fight Night, but David's not here, so fuck it. Next week.
Oh, well.
Yeah, shit happens. Fight Night would have been brought to you by Patreon. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics, become a patron today. I revamped it. If you're still listening to this episode, which I hope you are, I hope you listened to the whole thing, you might have noticed last week that there wasn't an episode in your regular feed. That's because after every arc, so after our guest series with Japan or our guest series with Brandon, and after this one, we're going to take a week and not post something in the regular feed and instead post a special bonus issue or bonus episode in the Patreon feed. So two months ago, that was a blooper reel. This last week, when you might have missed an episode, we published, a thing about our discussion of the Warcraft trailers and what's going to be coming up there and some other cool stuff. It's not about a full episode. It's, you know, about 20 minutes worth of content, stuff we usually just kind of chat about before or after an episode. Stuff I would normally just cut and leave out, but I feel like it's a good discussion and I wanted to find a place for it. So I found a place for patrons, and it's not like it's gated behind a huge thing. If you want to listen to this bonus content, if you want to get access to it, you know how much you have to pledge? A penny. Straight up, just become a patron at any level and you'll get access to this bonus content. So head over there, and also it gives us a little break, which is nice. So head over there, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics, become a patron for as little as a penny. It's not, I'll be honest, your penny a month isn't going to support the show that much. But we will appreciate it, and it will boost all of our morales a bunch.
Yes.
And it'll only cost you 12 cents a year. So go to patreon.com/welcometocomics, become a patron, get access to the bonus stuff. And if you pay us enough, maybe we'll be able to get David to come next week, and we can do the Fight Night that we would have had that would have been sponsored by Patreon. Then I ended up filling up time with just an ad. Anyway. So anyway, that's it for this week. Next, we're gonna read The Omega Men by Tom King. This is another one that was on a bunch of best of lists. Omega Men was a 12-issue run. I don't want to commit us to doing the whole 12, so I'm only going to do the first half, just 1-7. And we'll start the discussion there. I have no idea what this is going to be like. I know The Omega Men is a team of extraterrestrial characters from the DC universe that are loosely tied to Green Lantern. Think Guardians of the Galaxy, but not related to Earth in any way, or Earth superheroes in any way. Just like, if Guardians of the Galaxy had been made, like, if Guardians of the Galaxy had been founded by some character on Blurg 89.
That sounds amazing.
Just this team on the other fucking end of the planet, other fucking end of the galaxy. That's how I'm familiar with the Omega Men. I don't know if that's what this is. But this is on a bunch of best of lists, so we're going to read the first seven written by Tom King. Yep. Anyway, that's it for this week. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.